Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show. My name is Don Allen. Over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how's it going on this beautiful evening here in the Twin Cities?
Man, Don, I can't complain, man. It's beautiful. It's still August and et cetera. And want to kind of let us flow into our program kind of thing, man. You know, the latest sharpness out, the Ron and Don program, brother, coming to you from the studios, if you will. Shit. What we got, man? Much going on in our city.
We got
some things that you want to talk about. So let's kick into it, man. And then I got an observation, a question when we get through with Paisley Park is up for quote unquote management. Is that what it is? Lay it out to us, Don. Lay it out.
Yeah. What's happened? The same people that run Graceland down in Memphis have tendered a deal with the heirs of Prince's estate. Some of them agree, some don't agree, but the ones that don't agree are the ones that don't matter. And so what's going to happen is it's going to be turned into a tourist attraction. People are going to be able to come in, pay a little fee, and walk through and admire some of Prince's animated Gumby figurines that he put in his studio in the little nooks and crannies and the soundproofing there. And so that's going to be pretty interesting, but, you know, that brings us back, Mr. Edwards, to the point. If we had a viable historic archive or collector like our Black Museum that, you know, lasted about a minute, you know, we'd have opportunity to create opportunities.
Well, it wasn't a cheap minute, Don. It was $3 million, buddy, but go ahead.
Oh, yeah, the $3 million minute. That could be a movie. Feature movie, the $3 million minute. Yeah, so, again, you know, we don't have anybody in Minnesota with the pockets deep enough or the mind wide enough to go ahead and keep that stuff in Minnesota, and we'll be paying 50% out to the same people, again, that run Graceland for Elvis. Now, you know, they've suffered through some financial situations throughout the years down there where at one point there, about 5-6 years ago, if I'm not mistaken, they were going to shut it down for a minute, but, you know, they came to rebound. And
okay.
So they'll be up here meddling in our stuff, and of course, you know, our leadership doesn't have acumen to even, you know, attempt to approach that and find out, you know, how this will happen. I look forward to going out there, Mr. Edwards, and seeing, you know, the little white girls from the suburb take my ticket and my money and let me walk through it and tell me.
Sure. Yeah. Let me ask a couple questions, Don, because we wanna do the best that we can for our listening audience. Domestically and internationally, give us a little background on this management company out of the one that's managing Graceland in Memphis, Tennessee. You know, do they also do some of the management at the Grand Ole Opry up in Nashville, or do you know?
No, I do not know exactly what they're managing. There was rumors that they're working with. It's Graceland Management LLC in Cunningham, Kentucky. And, you know, they have profiles on Bloomberg, and it's a private company, so we will not be.
Oh, it's a private company. Oh, okay. So you can't even hardly look at their financial sheet, man. Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so we're not going to be, you know, be able privy to a lot of information other than they'll be walking away with, you know, 50% of the proceeds annually from whatever, you know, people do.
Have any of our newspapers or anything picked up on this?
The conservative radio station, AM 1130, talked about it today.
Oh, the one that you're on.
And,
okay, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
They talked about, I wasn't on today, but they talked about it tonight. It was on tonight. And, you know, they just said that you know, they're looking looking forward. The company is looking forward to coming up here and talked about the heirs that were, some of them didn't agree with it, and some of them, you know, the ones that didn't agree don't matter. So
okay,
we'll
so in other words, they have what, like a 0.5% or whatever it is. They what they already are doing the vote now. Is that Bremer?
Well,
Bremer Bank has set that up like that. Okay, I see what's happening.
And they're,
so
they're,
we really don't know anything about the company. Okay.
They're planning on starting in October this year.
Wow, that quick? Woo! They're gonna make some money for the heirs to Prince. Oh, that's right, because they're doing the DNA testing, and the judge down there in Shakopee or wherever it's at down there, Chaska, wherever, has already indicated who has passed the litmus test, if you will. So they'll be getting some fresh money in even before they decide how to cut up the estate. What's it up to now, Don? What, about 28, 29 million?
Oh, it's way up there. But you see, you know, I was down in Memphis a few years back, and you know, Graceland has a 450 room guest hotel. They have really nice nightlife. They have the area there is so well developed that, you know, they got that Lake Ann, that park around Paisley Park, and all that other. They're going to make that, Mr. Edwards, a destination as grand as something in Las Vegas. You know, where you can come there, you can stay in that beautiful hotel.
Vegas in the Midwest. I got you. A lot of people have those kinds of dreams. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they'll be running it. Now, what did you say the take was between the management company and the designated heirs, or and quote unquote
the
partners? Was what you say 50% half split down the middle, or what?
Yeah, the management company is taking 50%. That's all that's been confirmed.
Okay, so they're taking 50%. Okay,
50%.
Whatever comes in at the gate and anything else. Yeah, I wonder do they, based on what you said you saw when you were down there in Memphis a couple of years ago, I imagine do they get a cut of any you know, merchandise, artifacts, and et cetera, or is that going to be under the control of the trustees?
Well, they would almost have to, Mr. Edwards, because we need to look at the big picture here. You know, Graceland has a 450 room hotel. If they can open Paisley Park up now to let people do tours, but that would die off in less than 2 or 3 years. So what are they going to do? You're looking at that from a business perspective. You're going to have to put a hotel and some nightlife out there.
Okay.
You know? And so it'd be the only smart thing to do.
Now, how close are they to the Indian reservation and the casino down there, Mystic Lake or whatever? Yeah. How far are those guys away there?
I don't know how far they are from Mystic Lake, but they're in Chanhassen, right off, you know, I-5, take 5 west straight out. You run right into it, basically.
Uh-huh.
And so we were out there. My wife and I went out there to see all the beautiful memorabilia and memorial items hung up from around the fence around Paisley Park. And it was a shame that, again, Mr. Edwards, there was no one there to catalog that and put it in a museum, because – you could have done a hell of a show, and took it around the country with just the stuff that was on the fence around Paisley Park. I hope someone got that before the inclement weather gets here. But, yeah.
Okay.
So,
you know, if we had the museum,
we'll
that, of course, we don't, the museum could have put in a bid to have, quote-unquote, managed the new Paisley Park exhibit. You know, think about it. Boy, what that would have been a nice piece of money for the museum, and would have, you'd have had that local touch that you were just talking about. That local touch is so important, you know what I'm saying. Wow. Okay. Anything else, man? What else going on?
Well, that's it with the Paisley Park stuff. You know, Donald Trump, my good friend, my good buddy, told the black community that, you know, what do you have to lose? Speaking in part about this upcoming election, trying to make a plea to black voters in the United States. And I just went back, Mr. Edwards, and I pulled back, went into our archives, and what popped up and what was kind of interesting was the 2011 tornado that hit North Minneapolis. And then when you asked, you know, have things been better since 2008? And, you know, that's a question that has, you need some deep thinking. You just can't dismiss it.
And, you know, and our state's since 2011, because as you just said, the tornado was 2011. 2008,
yeah, well, I'm talking about
a period
Obama
of time,
being in office, too. I'm also talking about since President Obama has been in office, too. That's why I said 2008.
Oh, okay, okay.
So,
yeah,
you know,
when
but getting here locally, yes, 2011 is when the tornado hit North Minneapolis. But on the overall, the bigger picture, that you're looking at this span of time, and, you know, I watched in 2013, 2014, the GBLT community get everything they want handed to them on a platter, and no one really came back to the black community and says, okay, we're going to help you push your agenda now. We're going to help you push
employment, economic development. Let me ask this question for transparency and the phone line, sir, because you had the opportunity to sit with the group, and also I attended those meetings, and we had to be on our best behavior or we'd be trespassed and et cetera. What do you think really happened there? All that money that was going to come in and the things that were going to happen and all the different agencies, Emerge and of course, Summit Academy and whatever the other groups were. What was your take, man, on that? What the heck happened in 2011 that we had so many tarpaulins and et cetera still on houses as late as 2014? It's not funny, but that's
know,
the fact.
It's really interesting. Really. What was really interesting, Mr. Ayer, was that the snakes came out of the water. You found out here locally who got money, who did not get money. Although there was not a report, there was a whispering campaign going on. You know, the Minneapolis Foundation basically redacted themselves from the whole situation in North Minneapolis after they gave the money and didn't feel that they were responsible to do any kind of report or update or oversight of what's going on. And if you notice, I don't have the exact date of the tornado in 2011, but I'm sure it's already passed, and I don't think we've heard a word about it, because I know I didn't bring it up.
Well, I think the tornado was, what, May 11th?
Yeah, yes.
Or something like that,
okay.
Or May 23rd or something like that.
There.
Maybe somebody will call in and give us the actual date, but it was, I think it was like, well, probably, May 21st or 22nd or of 2011, I remember the big meeting at the Urban League when the orders were given to put together the master plan for that. And man, they raised millions of dollars. So things should have went real well on that, man. But I guess, and you know, we talked about it on these blog radio programs because no one could ever find an official report. Am I correct, Don?
You are correct. You are absolutely correct.
Uh-huh.
And people wondered about that and asked about it. And, yeah, it was May 22nd, 2011. And
that was the date?
There was really no – that
yeah,
was
you
the
called
date.
It up on the computer? Good, yeah. I thought it was one of those dates because I will remember there were two Pacific meetings that the 24th or a couple days after where Mayor R.T. Ryback came in and all these folks were there, except the idea – for the plan as it pertains to the recovery of North Minneapolis. I mean, and anybody that wants to question this can go back and listen on demand at that particular period of time. I was sitting there that morning. That idea came from Lutheran Brotherhood.
Yeah, exactly.
And the Salvation Army and one other organization, but none of them were black. And then that afternoon there was a meeting and at the Urban League across the street. And, man, the next thing I knew, all the ideas that I had heard in the morning meeting coming from Lutheran Services and the Salvation Army, Red Cross also had some excellent ideas. They were really moving. Next thing I know, all of their concepts were thrown in the trash basket, man. And I was like, wow, you know. Maybe that's why they had a problem getting things started. But hey, a lot of money came in, man. By the way, for anybody that wants to call or challenge, I have the actual numbers, and I also have the email that was sent. Oops, indicating how the plan would be put together as directed by representatives of the city coordinator's office. But anyways, hey, okay, man, yeah. But, you know, that history had been great if we had a history museum, but we don't have any of that. Say, Don, let me do this. Of course, phone lines are open in case anybody wants to call. Don, shoot that number out there, man.
That number is 347-426-3904, 347-426-3904. But before we move on, Mr. Edwards, I guess my point was regarding Donald Trump is that, you know, he did put a plea out there, and I hope some people take it seriously and really take a hard look at what's happening. You know, for,
well, you know, this columnist has done that in the edition, next week's edition, because it runs 8 days behind. Nothing I can do about that. But in my column in the Spokesman Recorder next Wednesday, I raised some interesting questions in my own mind with regards to the challenge that Donald Trump did throw down, irrespective of what a person thinks about him and et cetera. He dropped a hell of a lug on the Democratic Party by talking in terms of the problems. And I noticed in the last couple of days they've been repeating that speech in Milwaukee, if you will, and then later some comments in Akron, Ohio, and et cetera. And I just think, you know, for the Democrats, you know, our supporters and spear carriers, or what you want to call them, I'd like to get their thoughts on, you know, was Donald Trump offline? Was he, you know, sounding like a crazy man? Mm-hmm. Because that statistical data that he gave was pretty accurate, man. You know, the numbers of African American youth that are unemployed, the continued slippage as it pertains to the median income, the whole thing of housing, education, everybody, you know, the violence in the African American community. Now, I saw a Republican congressman named Duncan Hunter was on earlier today. Oh, man, he talked about us black folks like we halfway had tails. But he said something interesting. He said, all these major cities where all this violence is going on, black-on-black crime and et cetera, he said they're all governed by Democratic mayors.
Ooh.
I was pretty kind of upset, you know, but what Duncan Hunter said, again, Duncan Hunter, Republican out of Southern California, he represents a significant district there in San Diego for all the people that want to check and et cetera. And, you know, I had heard that before. I know that's kind of a no-no that we're really not supposed to talk about even as black journalists, but it's a fact. All the major cities where this violence is taking place are under the auspices and control of Democratic elected mayors.
That's sending a message. You know, that's saying something right there.
Man, it sure is. And on that particular point, let me just do this. Now, I understand that Bob Crow, the president of the police union, was he on your station there yesterday, or was it today? Or
it was Monday, Tuesday. He was, yes.
Yeah, well, that was just yesterday. Okay, give us a little insight, Don. Maybe help the discussion and the phone calls. How did it go, and what were you able to say to him, and what was your take on Bob Crow?
Well, I didn't interview him. He's contacted by Andrew Lee, the host of the show that works up there. But what he did say is that, you know, he was a little troubled that the city would kind of go after him, that he offered a state dinner because people were chalking up the parking lot, the newly paved parking lot, and
also
mostly, you know, that
graffiti
on
his Federation's building there in northeast Minneapolis. Yeah. Oh, man.
And,
wow.
And
okay, go ahead. Your take on it.
The main call was that there was no order to stand down at the Trump rally to tell the police officers to stand down and don't do anything. There was nothing like that, even passed down the chain of command, according to him. And, you know, it was just unfortunate. And so that was the cusp of the conversation that Andrew had with Mr. Crow.
Okay, so, well, because, you know, 11:30 a.m. is kind of a conservative Republican-type station. Let me just say, because this opens the phone lines for discussion, because I guess a lot of the conservatives who were just enraged that, you know, as they came out of this private by invitation only fundraiser there at a public facility called the Minneapolis Convention Center, that they were spat upon and cursed, and some of those ladies had beautiful, you know, $1,500, $1,700, $1,800 dresses on, and people were grabbing at them and et cetera, and there were conflicts. And so Bob was responding to the fact that that people were saying that the police offered no protection for the guests.
Yeah.
Is that what was being said?
They offered Yeah, they were offered no protection. I know a lady had her back spray painted and with her dress on, and I mean a lot of crazy stuff went on.
Yeah, she had a beautiful rhinestone. I kind of saw that that picture. Yeah. So Bob said that he, and then by the way, he is a lieutenant, so you know he's up there in command rank. That no such order was given, because the Star Tribune, I guess, even hinted at the fact that there may have been an order for the police to do nothing. Wow, that was basically Black Lives Matter and some others, right?
Yeah, that's a few people. Mr. Edwards, we do have a caller that's been holding who might have some insight.
Oh, well, put the caller on, man. Get the caller in here, clearly.
Caller, you're live on there. Who's calling? What's your name? Okay, they want to stay in the queue, it looks like, because I don't hear
you. People that call
that's
and tell
okay.
you they want to be on there, and then when we put them on, they don't want to, wow. Well, here's the reason I kind of asked about Bob Crow. I mean, I've heard, you know, a lot of criticism of it, et cetera. But I sat on a committee with Bob Crow for a year and a half. And I have to tell you that I was under the chairmanship of the assistant chief of the Minneapolis Police Department, assistant chief Chris Arneson, if you will, 30-year veteran of the department, well-liked and certainly popular. And, you know, I had heard all kinds of bad things about Bob, and I was kind of expecting from day one that we'd be some problems. But I got to tell you, man, we all worked together well as a committee. We finished our task, if you will, submitted our report to the chief, who then submitted that report to the Department of Justice. And, you know, the Democratic city government kind of got a pat on the head from the Democratic Department of Justice and et cetera. But as it pertains to Bob, I did not hear the kind of reflections that people had said. And so I just have to say in honesty that Bob was pretty amenable to many, many suggestions. And we had some meetings that there were some real heavy politics and consequences that became involved. And at one point I thought maybe, you know, Bob would challenge and maybe even get up, walk out, and et cetera. But we also had a member of the Federation on every one of our five subcommittees, as well as the signature committee, if you will, the steering committee, as we were called, and that would have been Bob. So I guess I would have to be honest and upfront the Bob Crow that I hear people talking about, and maybe, I don't know, how he came across on the program. You said you didn't get a chance to question him, or was that a decision you made at the table, or what happened? You still there, Don? Don must be talking to somebody who's calling in to try to ask the question.
I can answer your question. Yeah, I was answering the question, and no. It wasn't a decision made before, after, or during the show. It wasn't a decision. I put it like that. He had already called him a day ahead of time, and he was going to call in the 8 o'clock hour and Andrew was going to ask him that question, which Andrew did. So I actually sat back.
Oh, so Bo had called in the day before. Okay, gotcha. So
no,
it wasn't a live
called,
telephone call.
No.
Okay.
I want to get this straight for our listeners. No. Mr. Crow did not call in the day before. The host, Andrew Lee, reached out to him and asked him would he call in on that morning to answer those questions about the stand down or if there was such an order, et cetera. So that's what happened.
Right, right. Okay,
and the interview
got
lasted all but about 3 minutes. So, if that.
Is that right? Normally Bob talks a little bit longer than that. But anyways, okay, I wanted to ask it because information is being posted on law enforcement websites and et cetera. And so I said, oh, shit. I said, my co-host Don Allen on this little program was in studio when they talked to the powerful president of the Police Federation. Yeah, I do know that a lot of conservatives are angry because they felt that there should have been massive protection. I don't know, maybe we should have made it like Ferguson, brought in armored personnel carriers and things like that, you know. I mean, I don't know. What do you think, Don? What's your thinking?
Here's the thing. First of all, the organizers of that event, it was $1,000 a plate. If you wanted to go touch his skin, I guess it was like $5,000 or more. And the thing was, the organizers of this pay-to-play type dinner picked the dumbest place they could possibly pick it, in the middle of the most liberal city in the state, downtown Minneapolis. Okay, at the convention center where Lottie Dottie and his mommy could come down there and harass
yes,
him.
Yes, you're
and
absolutely right, man. Yeah,
you,
yeah.
But
they should have really had that out
of
Wayzata, shouldn't they?
Well, let me just tell you this. The Republicans normally never have anything in downtown Minneapolis, but this was not, per se, the Minnesota GOP, because if you recall, Mr. Edwards, the Minnesota GOP chairman came on the air, who I talked to in depth, who was scared to answer my question, and he didn't even go. So their events are normally in the far suburbs, so if you don't want to drive to Lakeville, Apple Valley, Rosemont, or way to hell at Egypt somewhere, and that's how they kind of keep it exclusive, you know, away from the city.
Well,
but,
I've seen them go as
number
far
one,
south as the other side of the Minnesota River.
Yeah. Maybe down in Faribault.
Yeah. They could have had it out
place.
In
so,
the
yeah.
Medina Ballroom out there. That's Republican territory. Yeah, they could have
set
it up real nice.
So, you know, the organizers, I don't think the organizers knew what they were getting into. And, again, this wasn't the Minnesota GOP. I was shocked to find out when I first heard about it that it was going to be downtown at the convention center. I said, what? They never do anything at the convention center.
Yeah, you know, I was too, Don, when I heard it. We really probably didn't get a chance to commiserate or chit-chat. I was shocked, too, because I don't know. It's probably been 1949, last time the Republicans really held something in the middle of downtown Minneapolis. I mean, it really been 1949.
Yeah,
you know, it's been
Mr.
70 years
ago. Our caller says he's ready. Let's see. Caller, you're
live.
Oh,
okay. Well, let's see if he's ready, whoever it is.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening, Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Nelson, is that you?
This is me. Good evening, Mr. Edwards.
Oh, how are you doing, sir? Appreciate you joining us. What's your question? And hopefully you've heard Mr. Allen and I kind of talking a little bit about Donald Trump and the big fun gathering here. Also, Don had a chance to be in studio with the powerful president of the Police Federation. But what can we do for you?
I absolutely heard him yesterday morning. He did a good job. However, the fact is, having Bob Crowell on, he loves going on to the conservative station, which I have to, full disclosure, I'm on from time to time myself.
Okay.
But Crowell loves going on there because he can, on that show, he can continue to worsen the relationship between he and the minority communities with the slanderous and bombastic
things. This has nothing to do with the minority community, though.
Yes, it does. Excuse me.
Go ahead.
Excuse me. Absolutely, it does. As I said, that's just an avenue where he can go and continue to his bad relations there with not only the minority community, but the mayor and the chief as well. He tends to down talk the chief and the mayor there too. But I was pleased to hear him say that, despite all of the rhetoric that was going on in the Republican Party, Minnesota GOP, and otherwise, that the mayor, how they slanderously said that she gave the stand down order of the chief, I beg your pardon, the chief gave the order to stand down because they were Donald Trump supporters. You know, that was simply preposterous. A lot of that came from this Star Tribune reporter that was also on the show, that he himself said that officers told him that they were told to stand down.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry, because this is kind of the first time I've heard, and I've not had a chance to read the Star Tribune's narrative. Who was the reporter? What was the reporter's name? You or Mr. Allen? Can you identify?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
What
was the guy's name, Don?
You tell me.
He said the
Star Tribune said order was given.
Yes, he was the one.
I never read that anywhere.
He was on the show. He was, I believe, on Monday. And he was the one that had gotten...
I wasn't there Monday. I was there Tuesday. Yeah, I was there Tuesday, so I didn't listen Monday.
Right. He was on the show Monday, and he alleged that he had gotten abused himself, assaulted himself. And that, again, there was officers within feet from him, and he said that after the assault, after he got assaulted and whatnot, he had walked over to the police officers and asked them, were they going to do anything? And then they told him that they had... You know, that they wanted to do something, but their hands were tied, was what exactly.
Oh, man, reporter
said.
From the Star Tribune made that kind of statement on
absolutely
conservative radio. You say on Monday, Mr. Allen was on Tuesday. Okay,
yes.
With Bob. Now, am I correct, gentlemen? Did Bob Kroll say that that was not an accurate statement?
He did. He absolutely did.
Okay,
I was very
okay.
pleased to hear him say that he had done. He said he was out of town, and he said that since he had got back, he had heard that, and he said he did his due diligence, and that none of his officers said that they were ever told that by the police, or by the chief, or anyone else. He also said that the Trump camp told him, because there was officers that had arrived there that were going to come there in tactical gear, and he said that the Trump camp told him that they didn't need those type of officers there at the facility. So that they then, in turn, left after they were told that they wouldn't need officers in tactical gear.
Oh, so that was the genesis for someone then running with the rumor that the officers had, even though they saw other officers in their blue shirts standing there. I understand what the play was. So as these tactical officers who are in their new camouflage uniforms with the hard hat and shield and automatic weapons, so they were told by the Trump people. Now, I want to be clear, Mr. Nelson, that on the Monday program on the conservative station, that the statement that was made was that the Trump people asked that the Minneapolis tactical squad be withdrawn. Okay.
Yes. Mr. Crow said yesterday that the Trump people had told him that they did not need the presence of those people, that of the police officers and tactical gear. So, again, I'm glad that he cleared up, because the narrative that every Republican, Kurt Dowd and other Republicans, have publicly said that the mayor was responsible for this, that the police chief was responsible for these actions of those that decided to inappropriately attack any supporter that they went to the convention. They had put out the narrative that because they were Democrats, the mayor and the chief. First of all, I don't know the leanings of the police chief, and I don't know how they do either. But they were asserting that because they were Democrats, that they had told the police officers to stand down because these are Republican Trump supporters. That was such
a
bogus,
serious allegation. No wonder that's gone viral across the country. Go right ahead, Mr. Allen, my associate.
Because we're supplying some terrible information here. While you guys were talking, I was listening to the beginning of the Kroll interview with Andrew Lee.
Uh-huh.
And a question that Andrew Lee had asked him about more police presence down there, and what Kroll was saying was that, you know, it wouldn't have been a good look to have those type of tactical officers down there in front of the event. You know, we don't want to be in that event. They don't want to be, you know, on national TV in tactical gear down there in front. I don't. So far, me listening, I haven't heard him say anything about.
Let me finish, because you're asserting that he didn't say that. So what I want to tell you, I want to tell you to finish listening to the interview, and you will hear him clearly say that the Trump camp said that they didn't want those officers there.
We get you one at a time, because, boy, this is important, because no wonder I've seen so much information on the police website network. But go ahead, man.
I'm going to finish. And it was actually not a Star Tribune reporter. It was a guy named Matt Erickson who went over to a group of protesters and a white guy and was asking him, what kind of job do you have? He was looking for ass whooping, basically. He asked folks in the videos what kind of job he had, what kind of job they had, where they lived, and all this. And some people did clock him, because he had bruises or laceration on his head, but he was not a Star Tribune reporter.
Don, was he with, though? Was he with one of the right wing, like the ones that exposed Omar, or who was he with?
He was a candidate for some congressional district this year who didn't make it across the threshold. A minute ago, Mr. Edwards, you had said something about the right wing, the one that had exposed Omar. Actually, the origin of the story came from a Somali website that there's screenshots of where that
website
was
listed. I see. So what
yes.
about the young lady
mm-hmm.
that was on the conservative station last week who didn't have all of the information? So I thought she was the author.
Well,
I thought you had said she was the author of the article.
She was the author of the article, but the lead came from a Somali website that was
Let me finish.
Thank you.
Okay.
It was picked up by a blog named Powerline, who produced it, and then Powerline is not local. So Alpha News, which is local, did some investigations, and the young lady wrote her story, and she didn't have a whole lot of good information until the second story. But by then, the case was closed, and basically Ms. Omar made a statement, you know, explaining it in detail, and they published that also, from what I understand.
Now, you said
yeah.
the case was closed.
I mean,
actually, it was no case, because didn't I understand over the weekend there was this discussion about the U.S. attorney, and then the U.S. attorney allegedly said in a couple stories that, and I guess him and KMSP got into it, that he had not asked for an investigation of, I guess, her marriage status, which is under the immigration law. So this matter with her has been settled up, right?
Yeah, there was no case. I wasn't using case literally. I was using the word case figuratively. And so
they're
basically backing off and just saying, okay, let's see what happens, what spins out of this. So I haven't seen anything else lately. So, yeah, they're moving on.
Okay.
But getting back to Jamar.
Okay. So we got Erickson, Anon. Mr. Nelson, looks like you were incorrect, sir. This Erickson, Mr. Nelson, was a freelance somebody, and kind of made some bad statements on 11:30 a.m. on Monday, right?
I do. Yeah, it was Monday, and I do apologize for misquoting his position where he worked at. But, again, he was on the show asserting that the officers told him that they were to stand down because these were Trump supporters. Again, Mrs. Sandivar, the lady that also tried to slander Miss Omar, she and I went back and forth about her inaccurate information that she printed as well. And then she, which I will be glad to print the messages that she and I went back and forth with, she then asserted that she wasn't alleging that she was married to her brothers. And I said, ma'am, well, your story all but alleges that she was married to her brother. And she says, no, that's not what my story says. So this is a lady that won't even stand behind the story that she originated. She, too, is a coward, and I called her out on that. And, however, she is not even after the real story. It's just amazing that they look for salacious stories to to malign this lady's character, which I don't get why for, you know, as if it was incumbent upon Miss Omar to produce evidence that she wasn't married to her brother instead of those that originated the story to produce evidence that she was.
Yeah, boy, that's a confusing. Now, were you, sir, or you, Miss Dunn, were you in studio with Miss Sandivar when she was talking?
No, I was not. I had reached out to her before she went on air, and have reached out to her since. And again, I will be very happy to publish the messages she and I went back and forth. And I, in fact, was just looking at them. She again alleged that that's not what she meant in the story, with that the lady was married to her brother.
Well, let me just say this on behalf of the Ron and Don program. I had suggested even last week that maybe we should be able to get her, Ms. Sandivar, but apparently she decline, Don, or did you ever get a chance to ask her?
I asked her a couple times, and I'm asking her again as we speak to call in right away and to see if she'll do it.
She won't. She likes to malign folks' character and then duck and hide. And listen, I think that to me, when a candidate like such as Donald Trump makes those statements as he did at his last talking down to black folks, to asking us what the hell do we have to lose, that for one speaks how this candidate is and how the Republican Party is further perpetuates the notion that they don't care about minorities. When you have the candidate speaking down to us like that, you're telling us that we're broke, we're poor. You know what? Honestly, when I heard him, I started thinking about the movie The Color Purple. Do you remember when Mr. was telling Celia as she was leaving the house how she was poor, black, and ugly, and she was broke and never would account to anything?
Yeah.
I likened Donald Trump to Mr. He simply was telling black folks.
And Mr. was
poor.
Danny Glover.
Was Danny Glover, that's right.
Yeah. I love that movie. I think it's one of the deepest and et cetera. Yeah, but Mr. was Danny Glover. Yeah. Yep. That's when she was getting in the back of the car with her friend and her friend's man, and that drove off in that big roadster. Yeah, am I correct?
That's right. They was on their way out.
Oh, okay.
And remember those things that Mr. said? That reminded me of Donald Trump. The way he talked down to Celia, as if Celia needed him. Listen, I miss now the fact that Mitt Romney isn't running or John McCain isn't running. When you have a candidate that speaks so negative about his opponent and his opponent's voters and constituents, it's ridiculous. I remember how John McCain squashed the lady that wanted to call the president a Muslim.
Remember
how he squashed that right then and there?
Yeah. You're talking 2008. 2008 election.
Yeah, 2008.
Yeah,
right
here
in St. Paul. Exactly. Right here in St. Paul. I just don't know how anyone can continue.
Have somebody on the line. Go ahead, Don. Go ahead, Mark.
Mr. Edwards, if I'm not mistaken, I think we have Priya on the air with us, who wrote the story in Alpha News, the first story that I saw about the
And this is who now? What's her name again, and who is she?
Hello, are you there with us? Can you hear us? Hello? Priya?
Hello?
Yeah, hi. You're live on the air. We want to let you know that. And we're having a discussion about Ms. Omar here. Jamar Nelson's on the line. And my co-host, Mr. Ronald A. Edwards, is on the line. And I'm on the line. And now you're on the line. And we just want to clear some. Actually, I think Mr. Nelson wanted to clear something up. I know that you guys have had some correspondence, and he's called in. And I just, you know, I think that it's fair to our large listening international, domestic international audience to kind of just get down to the nitty gritty and figure out, because this is not AM talk radio and we can be loose as we need to be. Can you just introduce yourself and tell us the organization that you work for?
Well, actually, I think you are expecting the wrong caller because
Okay. Well,
I thought we had Ms. Sandoval. Okay, mm-hmm. But let's do this. Let's be proper and respectful. We have Ms. Lisa Dean. Do you have a question for us, madam?
Well, yes, I have been listening to the show. It's very interesting. And, you know, I know that you guys are talking about the Republicans. You're talking about Omar. You're going back and forth. And one thing I wanted to say
That's what talk radio is all about. Go ahead.
Yeah, no problem with that. You know, in the United States, period, we have a whole lot of people that's marrying for citizenship. So if we under that umbrella, then we'll get a bigger picture instead of looking at the small pieces of a puzzle, because we understand that this woman is running for office, and she does represent her constituency, which are Eastern Africans, you know. So then if we could focus on what the African Americans are dealing with and who's running for us on our behalf, then that will be fair. That's one thing.
We do that all the time, except we can't find anybody in the African-American community at this point, like Congressman Ellison or somebody like that, who is being accused of, you know, polygamy. But go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay, we got Bobby Joe, and we got the other brother, so then we got some folks.
Bobby Joe and the other brother, whoever the other brother is, they're not involved with polygamy or allegations of polygamy. But let's just clear something. We didn't raise the issue as something generated by us. The issue came up as a part of a series of interviews and things that have been taking place, and it is fair to raise the question about what's the status, because I'm hearing so many different things. I'm hearing the case is closed, which there wasn't any case that we know of. Andy Luger hasn't indicated to us colored people that they're plotting to open a case with ICE. So, you know, let's be fair to us that it's a matter that is a part of the public record. But your point, I mean, is well taken. But as soon as we find a African-American candidate who is being charged with polygamy, then, you know, heck, we'll jump on top of it.
Okay, so then
there was no one charged.
Hold on. Excuse me, Mr. Allen, we were talking over Ms. Dean. Ms. Dean, I'm sorry, we were talking over you. Your question was what now?
Okay, what I was saying, if the issue is polygamy, then I understand, because you won't find any African Americans that's involved in none of that. But one thing I wanted to say, as far as speaking with the Republicans and the statement that was made, you know, I'm independent, so I can say whatever I want to say, either or, you know, for or nay. But one thing I wanted to say, some of the issues that we have been complaining about when we go to the Senate or out there in St. Paul to complain about the jobs and things like that, there was some truth to what Donald Trump had said. And I wanted to make sure that we understand that, and we understand the crime bill and how it affects our community, and to be fair and to talk about that, because when it comes to us making our decision based on our vote, I'm hoping that we're making an educational decision and not a decision that's based on fear tactics or race tactics or things like that that we fell subject to when Bill Clinton was running for office. That's how we got into the welfare rights laws and the crime bill and things like that. So
you mean free strikes and you're out, all those things that put so many Negroes in the penitentiary? Yeah, got you. Free. Let me just say this for you, that you raised the challenge to us. I'm sorry, General. Be sure to check my column in the Spokesman Recorder next week. And, you know, maybe you'll have an appreciation that, there are black folks who are on top of that. And that are able to go way, way back, that Donald Trump is not the first person to raise this question. Let me ask you this question, Ms. Dean. Don't you find it kind of troubling that the Democrats have been so slow to respond to the factual information that Donald Trump utters in Milwaukee? Or does that bother you, or do you think that the Democrats shouldn't even dignify it?
Well, first of all, that bothered me when there was no answer to the super predator question, and now we don't have an answer at all. I don't see anyone responding to what has been said by Donald Trump. So
I have to correct you that this column has into next week's edition of the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder. So go ahead.
Well, so as a voter, you know, and I'm not sure, you know, I'm dealing with the trust issue and the what's going on with the ego with Donald Trump. But I'm confused. It's to the point where I'm not even prepared to vote for anyone for president. And I want to focus on the local elections and how that affects my people.
Why don't you give us a couple examples? Unless we are loaded up in the queue and people are waiting to get online. We have any calls holding, Mr. Allen?
No, we're good right now.
Okay,
but,
hey, Ms. Dean, go right
wait,
ahead. Go right
wait,
ahead. So
she,
you're talking
she,
about a couple
of
local elections
minutes.
That have your concern. I mean, this is what talk radio is all about, gentlemen and ladies.
Well, at this moment, I don't have any questions, but then I just wanted to make a statement.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Well,
right.
Listen, if I might interject.
This
here,
is Mr. Nelson, Ms. Dean. Go ahead, Mr. Nelson.
I am proudly a Hillary Clinton supporter. Let me say this. Number one, she was just first. She was just first lady when the crimes bill was enacted. Number two is, I don't know, Lisa, if you remember 1995 and 94 here in Minneapolis when we had were deemed Murderapolis because we had the highest murders per capita. And not only Chicago, Washington, Milwaukee, they all had high murders per capita. So I don't know what we expected the United States president to do in order to curtail some of the crime that was happening. Now, I agree. He should have Zoomed in. He should have brought jobs and other different resources to the communities. Nevertheless, let's quit pretending that we don't have bad actors in our community that continually and perpetually commit crime, and that sometimes prison is probably where they need to be. Number two is Donald Trump was quite wrong about the African American rate of unemployment. Nationally, it's about 9 or 10%. It's no higher. Don't let a Republican or anybody else tell you higher.
Wait. You're incorrect. You are incorrect.
No, you are incorrect.
That is a misleading stat. Jamar, you can't get up there and tell me that.
It is
that
not
is
58. It is not 58%.
Where do they get those numbers?
No, gentlemen, you're kind of wrong.
Hold up, everybody.
Excuse me, gentlemen, and Mr. Allen is on point. Donald Trump, and I, because I've reviewed the speech in Milwaukee, Donald Trump said 58% for African American youth.
Oh, okay.
Let's correct that. 58% for the general African American population.
Exactly.
We'd be in rebellion, I assume. But go ahead, okay. Your point, and then we want to give Miss Dean an opportunity if it's necessary for her to respond. But go ahead, Miss Dean.
Miss Dean is correct, and I'm with you.
Just a minute. I have the reporter from Alpha News with us. So bring her on, please.
Because in that you took time to find her, why don't you make the necessary teletext call, and we'd like to get at least another 15 minutes in here on our program tonight, because Mr. Allen, you had slated your team for only an hour, right? Can we get another 15 minutes?
Yeah,
a half hour?
This is going to be sweet. We would ask you to stay with us now,
As well as Mr. Nelson and any other callers. But Mr. Allen, we need to do that so that we can continue to get
that's
this conversation
going. That's what I was trying to do. I'm sorry. I'm not going to be able to do that tonight. We have 8 minutes and 57 seconds.
Yeah.
All right. We want to thank Mr. Nelson and Ms. Dean. And Don, you have Miss Saville, or is that who you have on now?
Well, she'll introduce me. Priya, are you there with us?
Yes, I am.
Hello.
Okay, let's get her on. We want to thank Miss Dean and Mr. Nelson. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you.
All right, Don, why don't you give her the factual background and information that's led to you reaching out to her and sending her a text message. Go ahead.
Well, I sent her a text message asking her to call in because I wanted to. We had Mr. Nelson on, and we were talking about the Omar situation. And first of all, I'd like her to introduce herself and tell us the agency she works for. Go ahead.
Hi, guys.
My name
is Priya Samsundar, and I am a writer with Alpha News.
Alpha News. Thank you. And so you put out an article in under 2 weeks here about Omar running for she's basically won that seat because no one's going to beat her. She'll walk into it. And I guess, you know, I still have Mr. Nelson on the line and Mr. Edwards, and I guess you had some.
Yeah, Mr. Edwards will be on the line.
Mr. Edwards had some questions about that article. So, Mr. Edwards, I mean, ask. She's there, and
no, I don't
I
need to ask because you had
right
her. You had her on the program on conservative radio last week, and you certainly had a chance to interview her, my associate, and know what her response is. So, why don't you ask the question that all of us have been talking about?
Mr. Nelson, we'd like to have Mr. Allen
because I know that you say that you've been in consultation and talked to the young lady, but Mr. Allen was right there when she was on the program. But go ahead, Don. Guide her and et cetera. If not, I'll step in and ask the question. Mm-hmm.
Okay, in the capsule, knowing that we have about 7 minutes left, what was the point of the Omar article? Did she or did she not marry her brother? And I'm clearing this up because we're getting a lot of phone calls and text messages about it. And I read all the stuff. It's kind of a rhetorical question to me. But for our listeners, what was the thesis or the main point that Alpha News was trying to get out to the world about Miss Omar?
I think that the point is that Miss Omar definitely had some there were some questions into Miss Omar's past that definitely needed to be answered. I think at the end of the day, we hold our elected leaders accountable, and Miss Omar was elected to proceed forward to the November elections, which is why Phyllis Khan is no longer sitting in that role. And I think it's time that the people did a proper vetting, and that's just basically what we were doing, and we were asking questions because, you know, government documents are showing up and, you know, things are not making sense, and we wanted answers, and clearly
we only have five, but could you be just a tad more specific, because that's an interesting declaration that government documents are now showing up, because did you have those government documents when you were on the program at 11:30 a.m.?
Yes, I did.
You had those documents in your possession. Were you examined on those documents?
What do you mean by examined?
Examined. Did people ask you about the documents that you had that I just asked you seconds ago? And were you able then to elaborate on those documents? And did you identify what government agency these documents were the property of?
If you actually read my article, you would have seen that.
I didn't
that.
Read the article, but go ahead. That's why I'm asking you. Mr. Allen's trying to send you the signal. I didn't read the article, so I'm dependent upon you to clarify to me.
Well, we pulled government documents, marriage records, business records, things from social media. We did proper vetting and checked out tips that were being sent to us, and they didn't add up.
Now, this was from the Minnesota Secretary of State's office, the Immigration Services. I ask you the question, what government agencies are you talking about?
Hennepin County.
Hennepin County, the county of Hennepin, okay. And so those records are the records that you had on the program on KFAN, and you were vetted on that and you had an opportunity to respond, right?
Yes, I did.
And you identified the documents as – now, were you able ever to contact the Omar campaign and ask them to respond to those documents?
Yes, we've contacted them several times. We've contacted her criminal defense attorney, Jean Brandel.
Hold up. I'm so sorry that we can't get more time. This is very crucial. Why does she have a criminal attorney?
I think that's a very important question.
I know it is.
I would just like to put forth that I was not the first person to write this story. The story was picked up by a Powerline blogger by the name of Scott Johnson, who received a tip from an anonymous source on a website called Somali Spot, and
this was not a government official or even an elected government official, was it? Maybe you can't answer that for the purposes of confidentiality. But see, we're hearing some rumors here on the other side of the aisle that who the source may have been that had made these allegations, and I guess had produced or certainly identified some archives in which these documents could be pulled from. I know you're, as a journalist myself, I know you're not prepared to. And cannot and should not identify your source. But we're not talking about another government representative or entity that forwarded that information on this blog site. Were you able to identify who controlled that website?
I should mention that Powerline Blog was the one to vet information that ultimately cost Dan Rather of CBS Evening News his job.
Yeah, well, but Dan was well taken care of as he went out the door. But I'm sorry, but go ahead. That was a decade ago. So I understand that, but we're not here to protect the Dan Rathers of the world. But go ahead.
I understand, but what I'm saying is that Powerline has reputable information, and it's run by a set of lawyers. They do very good research.
That's right.
And they are all
practicing law here in the state of Minnesota. Am I correct?
Yes, that is correct.
That's right. Okay, gotcha. Okay, let me do this. Mr. Allen, my colleague, we're getting ready to run. I would like to appeal to you to join us next Wednesday at 8:31, and so we could have more discussion, because this is one of the better analyses that I'm now hearing as it pertains to this whole issue, particularly in light of the yes again, no again position of the U.S. Attorney for the Federal District of Minnesota, Andy Lugar, and apparently some gamesmanship, and then maybe you can give us a better feel, and we may be able to give you a better feel on why Ms. Omar acquired the services of a criminal lawyer. I would really like to invite you to join us at 8:31 next Wednesday. I would really appeal to you to do that, because this is an excellent in-depth discussion and investigative examination. Can you do that, or can you make that commitment?
I can definitely try. I can say that much.
Well, give Mr. Allen, because I know he's been in contact, give Mr. Allen a heads up as close as next Wednesday afternoon, if you can be with us. I would love to have you on the program again.
All right.
And thanks for calling.
All right. Mr. Allen's got James Brown marching us on home. I want to thank you for the time, and actually I'm going to be looking to hear from you at 8:31 next Wednesday. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
All right, Mr. Allen, I think you got that music going, baby. Take us on home. This has been a fun, heck of a program.